Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Billy Collins is our guest. Bill Russell?
I think it was Faulkner that famously quoted as saying, writers write. And somebody was telling us recently that to become a professional musician, it takes something like 10,000, 15,000 hours of
to get started.
Just, you know, to get the basic reflexes in place, the muscle memory, the neurons firing in more or less the right patterns. And my sense is that there's some of that that must be involved in your craft, partly reading lots, and probably I would assume writing lots. I'm going to assume that your first poem was not a masterpiece.
Right. I didn't get my first book published till I was 40.
That gives a lot of people hope, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I wrote a lot of. And it, for good reason. I mean, I was writing poetry before that that didn't deserve to be published. I wrote a lot of bad poetry, poetry that was bad, and that it was ultimately it was preparation, but in itself it was badly imitative poetry. So I hadn't figured out how to blend influences and to kind of hide the stitch marks. So I would come off as a sort of, you know, I was a third-rate Ferlinghetti and a 10th-rate Wallace Stevens, and it was clear that I was trying to be like a certain kind of poet or a certain style, and I was not very good at it. But I think if I hadn't persisted for some reason or other, I never would have broken through to anything.
What happened?
I think it was, you know, there's an expression called finding your voice, mm-hmm. and I guess that's what happened. I found my voice.
One morning you woke up and it was there waiting for you?
The expression finding your voice suggests that the voice is external.
And that it's lost.
And that it's lost, and you need to look behind the sofa cushions and another... unlikely places to find it. The voice is always inside you, and it's a matter of releasing the voice into yourself. Basically, poets who have not found a voice are unconsciously repressing things within them. And these are, I don't mean it in the darker Freudian sense of the word. They're not so much... repressing, you know, sexual transgressions in childhood. They're just repressing things like their love of music or their sense of humor or their silliness or their what they find in their daydreams. They have a sense of decorum of what belongs in a poem, and that decorum is almost always wrong. What belongs in the poem is it to find your voice. Lies outside your sense of decorum, so you need to take off your poetry goggles and let these other influences, not poetic influences, but let these other parts of yourself, let them come onto the stage and be part of the poetry.
Is that why you have your book open?
Well, I just thought if you pointed at me, I'd be ready to read something. Well, it's a beautiful spring day here, and I thought I'd read this poem called Today. If ever there were a spring day so perfect, so uplifted by a warm, intermittent breeze, that it made you want to throw open all the windows in the house and unlatch the door to the canary's cage, indeed rip the little door from its jam. A day when the cool brick paths and the garden bursting with peonies seemed so etched in sunlight that you felt like taking a hammer to the glass paperweight on the living room end table, releasing the inhabitants from their snow-covered cottage so they could walk out, holding hands and squinting into this larger dome of blue and white. Well, today is just that kind of day. It's a sort of violent spring poem.
It is rather.
It's aggressively spring.
Yeah. Get the hammer.
And rip that little door off. It's almost as if you're telling me about decorum being ripped away. Did you have to, when you found that voice that was not behind the cushion, was either your imaginary friend or your own being, wasn't there that kind of a growing up moment?
Well, one thing I was repressing in my poetry, besides humor, and was the kind of wise guy a part of my personality that likes to make trouble and be mischievous
and rip the hinges off
and rip the hinges off and make fun of other poets and make fun of poetic conventions. And that kind of bad boy, I was a little too well behaved in my earlier poetry. I was trying to be a good poet. And I think releasing that kind of juvenile delinquent into my poetry was very liberating for me.
It's also, but, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I felt I was free to mess around.
Well, then I could also relate to you. All that stuffiness is hard to relate to as a reader, isn't it?
Well, I was kind of rebelling against that, I guess, because I thought poetry had to be stuffy. I mean, I also thought, you know, poets had to have a fancy name. So when I was in high school, I mean, I wrote under the name W. James Collins.
Well.
So that sounded like a writer to me.
As it does to me.
Or W. J. Collins. I played around with a lot of these literary names. And around the time, I think, that I found this voice, I realized I was going to call myself Billy Collins because it's a unliterary name.
Were you ever called Billy?
Yeah, I was. In fact, because my father's was Bill, and he named me after him. So he was Bill, and I was Billy. But it does sound like the name of a shortstop more than a poet.
Uh-huh.
You listen to a lot of jazz, and it's, you know, every now and then it shows up overtly in your poetry. But I also have a sense that there's a jazz-like quality, and I don't want to overstate the similarities, but there is a playfulness
and improvness
and a, you know, certain insouciance that is there that feels a lot like jazz, and I think that's a lot of the appeal, at least for me, of your poetry.
Well, I think jazz among other things, is a very irreverent form of music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's taking you take a standard like Satin Doll or The Way You Look Tonight, basically a love song that came out of a movie from the 40s, and you cook the thing. I mean, you kind of use it as just a launching pad into some insane, 90-mile-an-hour John Coltrane solo. So there's a great deal of using the chords and all that, but there's an interesting amount of kind of ripping the poem to shreds or kind of putting it in a particle accelerator or something. So there's that analogy.
Which calls for you reading The Way You Look Tonight, your wonderful poem about the song that's in your head, and maybe I'm remembering it wrongly, but you wrote a poem about the stupid song in your head, and yet.
Yeah, the song that you can't get out of your head.
Yeah.
I think you're right in saying you don't want to stretch the analogy too closely between jazz and poetry, because basically, I try to write poems that sound kind of natural and organic and a little improvised, as if they're kind of just rolling off my tongue. That takes work, but as I've said before, there is no eraser on a saxophone. You know, you can't go back unless you're in a recording studio, but real improvisation means you are out there and you are creating spontaneously. In poetry, you might be trying to sound spontaneous, but you're stitching and unstitching a stanza 10 or 15 times.
You can do it that fast?
No, not that fast.
We talked recently with Curtis White, who's for want of a better word, a social critic. He's a teacher and a novelist. And he one of the major complaints about American culture is that we have downgraded, virtually eliminated the imagination, and that the imagination is absolutely central to coping with the world we inhabit, that things are moving around us, and if you don't, in the absence of imagination and the absence of shared imagination, the bad things can happen.
I like this guy.
Well, you would like this guy. His book is called The Middle Mind, and he's quite critical that we've dumbed ourselves down, mm-hmm. and we did it to ourselves, and we're kind of going to a middle nothingness. That uh-huh. There are no edges, and if nothing's happening, you're dead.
Interesting. I think poetry does provide, I think, the highest degree of imaginative freedom of any written art, because poets are not restricted as a novelist would be in terms of chronology and plausibility and inventing characters that then you have to deal with. You can't just eliminate them. But in poetry, there is the form and the craft of it, but within that you have pretty much carte blanche. You have complete imaginative freedom, and I think that's the excitement. For me, imaginative excitement is what attracts me to poetry.
This is Billy Collins, and Bill Russell will get to make his point in a moment when we come back. He's going to point us out of this segment and into the next. Join us in a moment.